At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Tuesday, April 2nd, 2024 edition. I'm Justin Klein, and my objective here, as always, is to help you become a better investor, keep you up to date on the current market trends, both near and long term. And unfortunately, most people, they get the long term wrong because they let their emotions guide their decision making process. And they fly by what happened over the past 6 months or the last year, and they think they should be doing that. We see it time and time and time and time and time again when people just lose track of what is important when it comes to investing, and that is economic and business fundamentals, not just what happened over the past few months, chasing the hot sector, the hot stock, or the hot asset class, whatever it is. And our job here is to, just as we do at our company, KAPP Financial, which was try to keep clients' heads about themselves, make down-to-earth decisions with your money, and not fall prey to the many pitfalls that plague the average investor. And once again, that is usually using emotions, chasing returns, chasing the sexy names. That's not what investing is about. Okay? It's about the facts on the ground. Not what you hope the market to be, hope the world to be. It's about what is. So we do this by answering your finance and investment questions. And you can call right now, 888-99-CHART. Anytime, leave your message and we'll answer it on a future show, or hit us here live as we do this 4 to 5 Pacific time each and every weekday. And before I get any further, I want to highlight the InvestTalk Market Madness Contest. We are now into the third set of matchups for the Sweet 16 today. And it was the winners were Mettler Toledo and Equitable Holdings. They will move on to the Elite Eight. And I will highlight later the matchups in the income region. And that will be between AES and Dominion, two utility companies, and then Kimberly-Clark and Marathon Petroleum. So we'll look at those a little bit later. But before we go any further, I want to do what we always do, which is answer your finance and investment questions. And right after that, we'll get to the market performance and run down our show topics. But let's talk to our first caller now.
My question is, I have a lump sum and I'm trying to figure out what to put it in. I come across VSMIX, which is an ETF, and I was kind of looking at the portfolio. I like where it's at. I'm curious if I could please get your analysis on this. If I just put a lump sum into this, am I diversified enough? Just put it in there, let it ride, see how it goes. I'll be listening for your advice. Thank you.
All right, sounds like he said DFMIX, and he said ETF. Well, remember, anything that is its symbol is five letters and ends with an X, that is a mutual fund. So that's what this is. This is a multi-cap equity, Davidson multi-cap equity. Expense ratio is 90 basis points, very high. So that's expensive. It's a large cap blend. Let me look at some of the further data here. Oh, of course. My computer wants to just die out on me. At least that tab is certainly a lagging here. But you know, it does look like it is fairly diversified, but I don't like that 90 basis points. That's really, really expensive for just a mutual fund that you have. And you know, I doubt the performance. I wish I could pull it up. My system's acting a little slow on me. There we go. It's always good to have, we have so many systems. It's just, you have your preferred ones and your other ones that are less preferred. Now, let's take a look at the holdings summary of this fund. Like I said, it's a multi-asset class. It has 22% technology services. Amazon is the biggest holding. Microsoft, Alphabet, Apple are the top four holdings. Progressive is the fifth, Salesforce. So it's very heavily weighted towards the tech space. Electronic technologies, 15%. Yeah, I don't love this. No, I would not be buying this as a buy and hold investment. Part of that is the fees. Part of that is the asset mix here. Only 4% in energy, 3% in industrials. I despise the mix of the sector breakdown here. So I would absolutely pass on Davidson Multicap Equity. You can do far, far better in the mutual fund space than this name and pay a lot less fees. Okay. So that was DFMIX is the symbol, DFMIX. Now, let's take a look at the market performance for today. Let's see if my system wants to cooperate with me. Let's wait for that to load. But before we get any further, I'm going to really highlight our main focus point today. And that is, well, this is one of my favorite topics. Why cash may be riskier than you think. Most people, they think cash, it's safe. Why not just hold cash? Oh, I'm getting 4.5%, 5% now. That's a nice return. That sounds amazing. I'm going to sit in cash. I like that. I'm earning 5%, no risk, etc. But the reality is that it can be further from the truth. Because it's not just about protecting from the downside of markets. It's also protecting against inflation. And most people don't think about that. Okay, so we're going to talk about interest rates, cash, and how to build your wealth successfully and protect your wealth. And sometimes, especially in environments like this, the risk is actually inflation. Even though we're used to it, we're scarred by 08, a giant deflationary bust. But the reality is far from the perception that most people have. That a deflationary bust is the only thing you have to think about. Inflationary spiral is also a factor. Okay. We're just not used to that here. But we're heading more and more towards that potential situation. Potentiality, shall we say. Also, we're going to talk about gold. This time, once again, not about inflation. Gold's going up. It's other factors, but inflation is certainly one of them. So we're going to look at that. Also, investors are starting to fade this 3 rate cut prognostication by the Fed. And what would that mean if that comes to fruition? Also, if we have time, UK stocks. Remember we had Brexit? Well, UK stocks have not done very well since then. But does that mean there's an opportunity? Take a look at that story as well. And of course, most importantly, on the docket, is your finance investment questions. Okay. So whatever is on your mind, 888-99 chart is how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Now we're going to a short break. On the other side, I'll talk about today's market activity. But please remember, you can call anytime and leave your question on the Invest Talk Voice Bank at 888-99 chart.
Invest Talk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel. If it's worth holding on to, or should I sell it?
Their questions are curious.
Hello. I have saved up around $80,000, and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
Oh, I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
It does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein, Steve Peasley, and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. InvestTalk is here to help. And when you download the free InvestTalk podcasts, don't forget to rate and review. The phone lines are open, 888-99-CHART.
It is 99 chart 88992 4278. Let's take a look at the market today. It was a decidedly risk off day overall. That's the best way to really describe it. The broad markets were down pretty strongly. The large caps are down about 80 basis points. Small caps definitely took it on the chin, down 166 basis points, 1.66% there. And we hit the 20-day moving average on the S&P today for the first time since, let's see, March 15th. So it's been a couple weeks, but that has been the line in the sand really since this market took off in November, is that 20-day moving average. And it feels to me like we want to retest that 50-day, which on the S&P is, let's see, down around, say, 5,100, a little lower, 55,070. Yeah, 5,063 is where the 50-day is right now. So it would not be shocking to see a pullback into that level. That would actually be pretty good support. You are seeing a bit of a widening in the credit spreads. Not dramatic, but certainly reminiscent of prior sell-offs last spring as well as last fall. Those are two times where markets pulled back, not dramatically, but in a minor way. And certainly, once again, a risk-off event. And I think the catalyst here is economic data. Economic data continues to surprise to the upside. ISM manufacturing survey rose above 50 for the first time in many, many months, which means that the manufacturing industry is actually growing once again. It was shrinking for many months, for, you know, pretty much a couple of years. For most months, it was below 50. And that is a sign that people aren't consuming as many physical goods as they were before. And so that is a drag to the overall economy. Although manufacturing, it's not, you know, nearly a huge part of our economy like it was 30, 40, 50 years ago, but it's certainly a factor. And you're starting to see the ISM perk up a little bit. The jobs numbers have been just fine. The inflation data continues to move to the upside, especially with a lot of the breakout in the not precious metal stocks, but just the commodities in general. And so what you're seeing here is a fading of this 3 rate cuts scenario, maybe pushing back QT a little longer, or end of QT a little longer. And that is likely to continue to create a potential risk-off event here over the next month, 2 months. Now, nothing that is likely to turn this bull market into a protracted bear market, but a cooling-off period makes sense here. As we just finished the first quarter, heading into the second quarter, it's a time when seasonally markets tend to have a bit of weakness. So not a shock to see this weakness as of late, but nothing to jump ship on, you know, go to a bunch of cash, which obviously we'll talk a little bit about later, but maybe rebalance your portfolio. This is an opportunity to do that. Now, coming up soon, I'll fit in a YouTube question. Remember, if you happen to watch Invest Talk on YouTube, you can leave your questions there in the comments section, and please tell your friend. Now let's squeeze in a caller question now.
Hey, this is Justin. My question is about a Roth IRA. I have one set up with some funds inside. Are you able to trade within the Roth IRA tax-free? All capital gains, tax-free. I buy Tesla at 170, I sell it at 200, and those gains are absolutely tax-free, and I can roll it into something else. And can I do options within the Roth IRA tax-free as well? Love what you guys do, and I'm looking forward to hearing your answer. Thank you.
Yes, any tax-deferred account, IRA, Roth IRA, 401k, Roth 401k, your gains, your capital gains there, You don't have to pay that. Okay. The only time you pay tax on a Roth, you already paid the tax. You never have to pay tax again, as long as you are trading within that account. So yes, it's a great tool to have. You want to do some trading. Now you can't take losses either. So if you buy Tesla at 166 and it goes down to 66, which I think it's actually probably going to do, then you can't take that loss either. So it works both ways. And then can you do options? You can do covered calls, covered positions, but you cannot, I believe, do any margin and therefore any naked options in accounts like that. All right, moving to a break. Ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Let's take a quick look at your financial to-do list. At the top, make that phone call to the InvestTalk Anytime listener line, 888-99-CHART.
Now, my focus point today concerns this topic, why cash can be riskier than you think. And I love, love, love this topic. And although 2022 was a year where cash was king, whether you were in equities or bonds, it didn't matter. Almost everything went down in value. And if you were in cash, you did better. And right now you can get 4-5% on cash, somewhere in that, depending on the bank, depending on what you're talking about, CDs, money market, whatever, right? But 2022 was 1 year. 2023 was also 1 year where, despite cash yielding, once again, 4.5-5%, equities did much better. Depending on what index you're talking about, mid to high teens, maybe low 20% range, much better than cash. And this year is the same, right? Equities are up anywhere from 5-10% already, one quarter. Once again, depending on what you're talking about, cash in one quarter is only yielding, 1.25% maybe. So what this shows you is that, yes, there are periods where cash can win out. But over most extended periods of time, equities did better. So the real return on cash since 1925 of U.S. equities, cash has returned 0.3% in real terms, okay? In real terms. Equities, 6.6%. Over the last 20 years, cash has actually returned negative 1.3%. That's obviously in an era where there's a lot of, zero rate environment. So you kind of want to get rid of that now that we're in a more normalized environment. But still, once again, over a 50-year, 100-year period, equities, even treasuries, do better than cash. So the first thing you have to understand is cash is a deflationary bet. But you're betting on. You're betting that prices are going to go down across the board. Earnings are going to decline for corporations. And therefore, their stock prices are going to decline as well. Maybe dividends get cut on top of that. But in most years, most reasonable periods, five-year periods over the last 96 years, stocks have beaten inflation in 77% of those five-year periods. 77%. So over the long term, equity performance tracks corporate profits. And guess what happens in an inflationary environment? Corporate profits go up. The only time that cash was king were over the last 20 years was 2008 and 2020. That's it. And so when you go all in cash, you're putting all of your eggs in this deflationary basket. And that's the way you have to think about it. Don't think of it as what yield can I get on cash? Once again, don't chase the yield, chase the asset. And what is the backdrop of the economy? Is it inflationary or is it deflationary? What do you think? Are governments going to allow a deflationary bust like 08? Or when there are problems like Silicon Valley banking crisis last spring, roughly 1 year ago, what do? They create an alphabet soup of programs to paint over the problems, kick the can, and keep inflation going. Why is that? Because they have to. They have to. Too much debt. And it's more politically palatable to have an inflationary pulse like 2021 and 2022 than it is to have a giant banking crisis, not just in Silicon Valley, but across the board with all the major banks in the country potentially going under, like in 08. Which one is more politically unpalatable? I'm going to say it was 08. And on top of that, cash is not without its own risks. We just talked about the inflationary risk, but returns on cash can vary. Maybe 4 to 5% today, but it could easily be 2 to 3% in 6 months. And then a lot of people think they're going to time the market. Right? They're going to say, oh, I'm going to have this money in cash. And when everything looks and feels right and the valuations look good, I'm going to put it in. But the reality is, when things look the worst, that's the best time to invest. Yet very few people do. They don't have the iron will. They point to all the problems that are causing this rough time. So when you say cash is without risk, you're wrong. Cash is without cash does have risk. It's inflationary risk. And so when you have cash sitting on the sidelines, that's what you have to ask yourself. Do you want to bet on inflation or do you want to bet on deflation? Cash is deflation. Equities, corporate bonds, etc. That's betting on inflation. On the next Invest Talk, we'll answer this question. Why are health stocks taking a hit? Give us a call now at 888-99-CHART. At this point, I think almost everyone has heard how generative AI promises to bring us to the next industrial revolution. AI is already shaping society with an impact on daily life that echoes the transformative significance of electricity or the internet. As we take steps to embrace the potential of generative AI, we need to remain vigilant with regard to its exploitability. This is where HackerOne comes in. HackerOne's AI Red Team addresses the novel challenges of AI safety and security for businesses that are launching new AI deployments. The HackerOne approach involves targeted offensive testing by harnessing the collective skills of ethical hackers who are proficient in AI and prompt hacking. In short, AI red teaming is the practice of stress testing AI models and deployments to make sure they can't be tricked into providing information beyond their intended use, and that security flaws can't be exploited to access confidential data or systems. HackerOne seamlessly integrates with your existing tools to enhance communication and collaboration across development, security, and IT teams. So, stay ahead of the game in the battle against cyber threats with HackerOne's Attack Resistance Platform. Learn more at HackerOne.com. That's HackerOne.com, HackerOne.com.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many variables. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go talk to Joshua in Texas, looking at PRDO, which is Perdoceo Education Corp. How would you say it?
I think so.
Okay.
That's a better guess than mine.
All right. Do you own it or looking to buy it?
So, thanks for taking the call. But, yeah, I was just looking to buy.
Okay.
Looks like it's got a low PE ratio, high return on assets, good net cash position. I just can't figure out why it's valued the way it's valued. So I'm thinking I might be missing something.
Yeah, it's definitely cheap. You are hitting on the head. It has nearly $500 million in cash sitting on its balance sheet, no debt, $100 million in free cash flow trailing 12 months on an enterprise value of $560 million. That's a near 20% free cash flow yield. Enterprise value to EBIT around 2.5. That's cheap. It pays a dividend, certainly can afford that. Shares outstanding. What's it doing with all that cash? I'm assuming it should be buying back shares. It has been. Yeah, I like that. Are there any lawsuits going on with this company? Because this is a space where, you know, there's a lot of shady business often. You know, this is a for-profit education company. And historically, those businesses have been have poor practices. And, you know, are just trying to get people through the door, don't really give them a true education. And their degrees are not really looked favorably upon within the business community. Now, this one is mainly focusing on, what's the name of it? Colorado Technical Institute? Yeah. Is that, do you know anything about that particular university?
It seems to be aimed mainly at postgraduates or adults, so a lot of online. Their graduation rate isn't amazing, but it's not horrifying, and it generally takes people more than 4 years to get through it, though.
Got it, okay.
So they just like do it. Got somewhere around 30,000 students a year.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one red flag is some insiders did sell some shares recently. That would be a little bit of an issue for me. I'd have to look a little deeper in that. That was on, it looks like, a SEC filing on the 21st. But overall, you know, the technicals are fine. It's been trading here in a range in the mid to high teens since its earnings came out. I'm assuming that's earnings back in August of last year when it went up from the low teens to around $17 per share. So I like the technicals. I like the fundamentals. You know, the balance sheet is obviously spectacular. Their business cash flow is strong. And you know, if the economy and the job market gets a bit weaker, well, certainly you could see more people going back to school and enrolling in their universities. So I like the idea of it. I just have to do a little bit deeper work because it is a small cap, only $1 billion market cap, and be confident that this is a reputable business, reputable universities that are truly educating their students, not just kind of going through the motions and basically a student loan mill. And there's been a lot of those in the for-profit education system. So I definitely like the starting place here, and I just need a little more confidence in that underlying business. Thanks for the call. That was PRDO. Now, from time to time, we receive InvestTalk questions from the YouTube comment section of our InvestTalk YouTube channel. And here's one that came in last night. Ulam Spiral says, I have significant position in SCHD. What are your thoughts on this ETF's given recent underperformance? Is it something worth holding for dividend growth and total return? Now, this is a very popular ETF. And this is the Schwab US Dividend Equity ETF. And it's popular for a fairly good reason, but I don't think a fantastic reason. Now, low expense ratio, only 6 basis points. But if you look at the breakdown of the holdings, you have Texas Instruments as the top holding, Bristol Myers Squibb, I'll just break it down. Texas Instruments has been underperforming. Bristol Myers also been underperforming in a protracted downtrend. Lockheed Martin, despite the Ukraine war, been in a downtrend. Pepsi, obviously, that's been in a downtrend. A lot of these are high debt companies and not exciting names or dividend payers. And a lot of them have issues. Pfizer's their ninth largest holding, and if you've been listening for any length of time, you know how negative I've been on Pfizer for a long, long time. So My issue is with, you know, the top holdings, not necessarily the general makeup. It's a large cap value fund, and that's what you would expect from a dividend focused ETF fund, etc. is leaning on the value side. Dividend investing is just a form of value investing. Okay. So it's not doing anything special. What I would say is I think you can do better if you want large cap value. And I don't want to be hogtied to just the dividend because as I've said, don't chase the dividend a million times. Chase good businesses, good profits. And not that these aren't good businesses, many of them, but you're lumping in the Pfizers of the world with decent businesses. And a lot of them are bond proxies because they pay a high dividend. So it's okay, but you can do far better. Thanks for the call, or thanks for the comment in the YouTube section. Now let's highlight today or tomorrow's matchups in the final set of matchups in the Sweet 16 in the income region, shall we say. And we're going to look at AES Corp, a utility company, against another larger utility company, Dominion Resources. Now, this one's hard because they're going to be fairly correlated. It's just a matter of, you know, who has the slightly better day tomorrow, right? Utilities could be down and they both are down and one is just slightly less down. Now, we own AES for clients, $12 billion market cap versus Dominion's $40 billion market cap. The relative strength on Dominion's 31 and AES is 25, although AES's chart has been improved. That was over the last year. AES chart has certainly been improving more over the past few months. So I'm going to go with AES on this one. We're a little bit biased, though. And then the next matchup is Kimberly-Clark, KMB, relative strength around 35, versus Marathon Petroleum, relative strength 94. And I'm definitely going to go with Marathon on this one. Oil has just been on a tear up and up again with Marathon. So that's just been crushing it. I'm just going to have to go with Marathon. Even though it's overbought, just that momentum is too strong. But we'll see as we round out the Elite Eight. That will be once we get the finals for tomorrow, we'll be into the Elite Eight, which will have those matchups on Thursday. And then Friday will be our Final Four, and then Monday will be our finals, right? Now let's talk a little bit about gold. Gold, gold, gold. Gold is absolutely crushing. So interesting, especially because so many people were down on gold just recently. Gold miners, you know, they were underperforming to start the year, and now there's been a massive reversal. GDX is now up on the year after being down the first couple months, down 15% or so, from 31 all the way to a low in late February around 26. So yeah, down nearly 20% in 2 months. Now it's up on the year. Just shows you how quickly those names can certainly turn around. But gold is a contentious topic in the investment world. Some argue that it holds well against inflation. Others argue that, you know, it has no use. It's a barbarous relic. But now that gold is over $2,200 now, it's all-time high, the argument's ramping up again. Now, as I talked about on yesterday's show, as that caller asked about the 25-year return of gold versus stocks, yeah, there are periods where gold outperforms stocks. Two of the last five decades, gold has done better than equities in two of those five. Now you take the whole, you know, 50 years, equities have outperformed. But what it shows you is that in any given decade, things are going to look very different than the previous decade. Now, if we go back to 1971, when the U.S. officially ended the link of gold to $35 per ounce, okay, during the 70s, gold rallied 10 times, went up tenfold in the 70s. Consumer prices doubled over that time, and it was up tenfold. So its real return was fantastic. The S&P's total return in the 70s was 78% versus 1,000% for gold. Then you have the 80s and 90s. Gold lost 20% of its value in both the 80s and 90s. And what did stocks do? They roared. Basically up until the end of the 90s. And then the S&P skid. It lost 9% over the first decade of the 2000s. While gold rallied 275%. Now, zooming out from 1970 to 2023, gold annualized returned 7.5%. But stocks did roughly 10.6% total. Doesn't sound like a big difference, but 3% over 50 years difference is huge. So stocks benefit from growth of the economy, innovation, growth of the real economy. But what you can see is that when times get rougher, gold does tend to outperform because economies get less efficient. Now, the most recent peak in gold was when the S&P downgraded the U.S. credit rating, 2011. That was the last time gold was anywhere near here. So it underperformed after that. It just shows you chasing returns is not a good way to get rich. It's like looking at the recent performance of NVIDIA. This is what I want to remind you of. Just because something gets hot, something sexy, something is interesting today, because it's up hundreds of a percent over a short period of time, you should be going, I don't know about that one. Now, if you're a trader, you want to ride that momentum and you have an out, sure. But as a long-term investment, no. So gold has gone through this long, decade-long plus doldrum, and it's starting to wake up again. And we know when confidence in society and political institutions, when that confidence declines, the appeal of gold goes up. Gold can be transported. It's a store of value. It is. Has been for thousands of years. Now, Bitcoin's argument is that it will replace gold, but you can't touch it. You can't feel it. You can't take it across a border without regulators. So I think gold is just getting started. As geopolitical tensions potentially ramp up, gold's time to shine is here again. Now let's pivot back to our InvestTalk voice bank at 888-99-CHART.
Hello, InvestTalks. This is Franz from New York calling about two industrial companies I own. Emerson Electric, ticker symbol EMR, and Masco Corp, ticker symbol MAS. At the time I bought both companies, they were full positions, but as I added more capital, I prioritized investing into energy and basic material sectors. So both positions shrunk to about 1.2%, and I'm looking to increase my position in both companies at their current levels and continue to add if this pullback continues. Both are good businesses with great long-term prospects, and Masco appears to be fairly priced. So my question is, do you agree with my idea? Thank you for the help and education. And I'll be listening on the podcast.
All right, looking at Emerson Electric as well as Masco. And you're barking up the right tree here. We actually own both of these for clients. Emerson Electric, a mega cap. Let's see, what is the market cap? That's in front of me. There we go. $65 billion. Earnings this year are supposed to go up 22%. Those estimates are headed higher. We like the name. I wouldn't say it's super cheap, but it's a great business with great tailwinds with the reshoring of manufacturing. They have some automation division, and we like Emerson as well as Masco. And Masco is more in the manufacturing of cabinets, plumbing, other home improvement markets. They have a large paint brand, and their business continues to shine, especially as one of the reasons we own this name, along with actually another one in the space is because people are locked in the 3% mortgages. And what are they going to do when they can't move because they don't want to lose their mortgage, but they want to make their house better in some way? Well, they're going to just hire somebody or do it themselves to paint it, to remodel it, to improve it. And so I think there's a lot of tailwinds for companies like Masco. So I like both. I think either one works to add to on any reasonable pullback. Now, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekday, and that's to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Everybody wants a secure financial future, but getting there takes strategy, discipline, and the right information. That means you'll have finance and investment questions. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Just had a question about a regional bank in East Texas. It's called Southside Bankshares, ticker SBSI. Looking at starting a position, just curious on what you thought about it. I know that the stock price decreased a couple of weeks ago, and thinking about starting a position, if you can just tell me a little bit about the company overall and what a good entry point would be. Thank you.
All right, looking at Southside Bankshares, SBSI, which is a regional bank, fairly small name, about $846 million market cap, and 5.2% dividend yield, but the relative strength is 24 versus the KBE, the S&P banking ETF. That's a 73. So first thing you have to ask yourself, why is this underperforming the broader index? Simple answer. It's too small. And its business line is probably not diversified enough. I don't know enough about it, but I can tell you just simply by the trends in earnings. Last quarter, earnings down 34% year over year. Revenues down 16% year over year. And I've been saying this since the Silicon Valley Bank crisis a year ago. So now over a year, the simple fallout from all that was small banks are screwed. Do not invest in small banks. You are going to see massive consolidation within the space, and not in a positive way. Not because the big banks are trying to strengthen themselves by buying some of the smaller banks and garnering the IP that they have or something special that these smaller companies have. No. What's going to happen is, slowly but surely, these banks are going to have to sell themselves and get bigger, combine themselves with a bigger entity at probably much lower prices in order to save their balance sheet. Because either they have too many long duration assets like treasuries, or they have too much exposure to commercial real estate like office. The backdrop for regional banks is just very, very poor. So if you want to own a bank, own a big bank. That's where this country is going. There's going to be a lot less banks. And frankly, that'll be easier, probably for the government to manage. And if you look at other developed nations, most of them don't have a lot of banks. Just a handful of banks that compete with each other. Not really a need for a bunch of small banks. And so the relative strength here, the trends in earnings, the backdrop here, it just doesn't line up. So absolutely do not buy SBSI. Now, before we close, I want to highlight a change in market expectations for Fed rate cuts. As of today, the market is now pricing in 0.68 percentage points of cuts by the Fed by December, by the end of the year. Fewer than the 75 basis points that the Fed has been projecting. And the odds of a June cut is now down to only 63%. As of January, just a few months ago, the markets were pricing in 6 to 7 cuts. Now we're down to less than 3. Why is that? Well, Once again, the economic data continues to come in hot-ish. The U.S. Manufacturing ISM survey, as I said at the top of the show, expanded in March for the first time since 2022. It was below 50 for all of last year. And so far this year until March. And then the PCE price index that came out on Friday, that was a little bit higher than expected, accelerated a little bit from February. Not dramatically, but still that 2.5%. That's far from the 2% target from the Fed. And overseas in Europe, traders are also dialing back expectations for rate cuts. The BOE, the bets on the BOA is 68 basis points. And the ECB, 90 basis points. Down, that's down from 150 basis points of expected cuts to start the year. Why? Because global manufacturing PMIs also pushed up into positive territory. 50.3 in March from 47.5 in February. So the economic data is saying there's not just a soft landing, there's no landing. And that the Fed is unlikely to cut rates much at all this year. And in many ways, I agree. Well, that about does it. I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. And remember, stay up to date for daily results of our Market Madness contest. We're coming down to the end, and someone will collect the grand prize of $1,000. Now, learn more at investtalk.com. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461.